Hebrews, the 11th chapter, verses 9 and 10. By faith, speaking of Abraham, he lived as an alien in the land of promise, in tents with Isaac and Jacob, fellow heirs of the same promise, for he was looking for a city which had foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Dear friends, Abraham wasn't looking for the land which you see on the map, though he was called to go. You may not be able to see the small details in that map, but that map shows you the great journey that he made. And when you figure the distance he had to travel because he had to go up the river valleys and back down, and doing it by foot, he really had a task. And then, on top of that, he went to a land which he did not know. That's what God called him to, Genesis chapter 12 and verse 1. A land? He didn't know anything about the folk. And you know, in our day, it may be a little more difficult, but I think we can appreciate this. Can you imagine going to a foreign country that has relative hostilities against the U.S.? Or suppose you went to a country in which their economy was weak and poor. What if you went to a nation in which their politics was not stable? Now, you think ours is bad. Try to go to some of these places where within a week or a month you may see a new ruler. He didn't know nothing about these people. And this ancient world was a very dangerous place to live. And there are various kings in those nations where he's going to. He's got to travel there. Are you traveling? We're going to talk about that a little bit this morning. Abraham was a traveler. But his traveling wasn't for the purpose of just settling in a land. His traveling wasn't just for getting new real estate. His traveling really wasn't just about him getting the family heritage that God promised him, though that would come. He certainly believed God's promise. He understood. I believe he probably appreciated much more than the generations that came after him about the purpose and the intent. Even if he did not know the specifics, he understood that there was something great coming. And this greatness would come in order as we notice. God's the one who tells us in Hebrews, the 11th chapter, that he lived in a land that he would live as an alien. That would mean that he was a foreigner, a stranger in the land. And that while he lived there, he would not own the property there. But he wasn't concerned about that, was he? For it says very plainly, he was looking for the city which foundations. The foundation, its builder and maker was God, its architect. He wasn't concerned about this land. That's why he could do it. And so what I'm appealing to you this morning for, and the same for myself, as we're going to have to change our mindset to an earthly, I mean a spiritual, heavenly mind, as opposed to an earthly. Now, we see that in Colossians 3 and verse 1. Paul makes it clear to set our mind on those things above, not the things here. But as I call you to change your mindset, what we're going to discover is that you're going to have to decide whether you're going to become a traveler or not. Are you going to become a pilgrim and sojourner? Are you going to walk spiritually, knowing, obviously, that whatever you have here, whatever you enjoy here, whatever their appeal there is not worth it. And it won't get me anywhere. It'll get me nowhere. We're going to address this. 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 17. He says, as you talk about him as being father, notice with me in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 17. Peter essentially implores, well, even commands us to do the same thing. 1 Peter 1, verse 17. If you address as Father the one who impartially judges, so if you appeal to the one who is the one who impartially judges, according to each one's work, what do you do, he says? Conduct yourselves in fear during the time of your stay on earth. In other words, it's a recognition that you're not here forever. I know a lot of us may think without realizing it as if we're going to be here. But time will tell that will not be possible. So therefore he says, knowing that you were not redeemed with perishable things, verse 18, like silver or gold from your futile way of life, inherited from your forefathers, but with precious blood. In other words, you're not redeemed by the material, even the most precious of the material, but you are redeemed by the precious blood as of a lamb unblemished and spotless, the blood of Christ. He goes on to say, for he was foreknown before the foundation of the world, but has appeared in these last times for the sake of you, who through him are believers in God, who raised him from the dead and gave him glory, so that your faith and hope are in God. That's Abraham that we read of in Hebrews 11. Though he could not see all things specifically, he knew very clearly that he was looking for that home which builder and maker was God. His faith was in that. His faith was even in the resurrection of the dead. You know, we've had a lot of rain, and apparently we do. And I was on my way Friday to go pick up something, and I noticed that on 471, there were five cars, looked like they were in the same accident. And we had to navigate around that. And I know why, because you could look. It was the wet road, the wet pavement, and someone wasn't paying attention. And next thing you know, somebody else is just driving a little bit too close. Can't stop. Maybe the brakes were bad. And next thing you know, you had three or four off over here. You had two. And they looked like were in odd places. You wouldn't imagine that they would be where they are. But you can tell they were involved all in the same problem. All right? These folks were traveling on the dangerous path, weren't they? But they weren't navigating as if it were. And then later on, I saw a couple individuals, the same thing, but not the five. They just slid off and they were down in the ditch. And so, again, this world is terrible in regards to tragedies and challenges, isn't it? It's going to be something that we have to navigate with a full faith that God is our protector and our caregiver. And that our minds would be focused on the things He wants, so that we plant our feet firmly on the right pathway. Because there's one other thing that is certain. That we have a spiritual journey, but there is someone else who desires to destroy all of that. The evil one, as we recorded in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8, he walks about as a roaring lion, seeking to devour you and I. Yes, dear friends. He desires to take us. And notice that. He's out there. If we're on this difficult road, while we are paying attention, looking to put the obstacles in our way. In this illustration, of course, we know that he is lurking about and hiding. And he's going to come out and pounce at the opportune time. And do not make any mistake about it. He knows those times. He's not going to waste his energy. He is not omnipotent, but he is not weak. He is not ineffectual. He knows how to destroy, and we have a world of history to prove that. We have a Bible that shows us that. We have observation in our lives that help us to see that as well. So when we think about the treacheries and the dangers as seen in this scene, there's very little water, probably none at all. And obviously in the picture, that's a great desert behind us. Rocky terrain, as I have chosen. See, that's what the road may look like to us. And we gotta go find the good path, right? You gotta look for the highway. You're looking for the easy path. We're gonna examine that. 1 Peter chapter 2. 1 Peter chapter 2 and verse 11 and 12. Beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lust which wage war against the soul. Keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles so that in the thing in which they slander you as evildoers, they may, because of your good deeds, as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. You see, what we discover also on our pathway, and we will talk about that in our study in the work of the church, on our pathway, we may have opportunities to help others see that clear pathway. That we can be observed by others. Yes, it can be very treacherous. And yes, the evil one, Satan, the devil, is working as a roaring lion lurking about, ready to destroy us. It's not a time, dear friends, to go find the easy way. Our traveling, yes, is important. But we don't need to be finding the easy way. We are in a spiritual journey. We better act like it. We better begin our journey. And we better be urgent in that affair. Philippians chapter 3 and verse 20 tells us very plainly, our citizenship, not our citizenship will be, but our citizenship now is in heaven. Now we understand we've not attained the fullness of that reality, but it's as good as done because God said it would be. And furthermore, our minds need to be decided as Abraham's was. He was a pilgrim and sojourner, as the text tells us, because he was waiting for that city which builder and maker was God. But in another sense, you could be saying that he already knew where his citizenship was. He already had his paperwork. He already had his birth certificate, as it were. And his birth certificate was stamped by God in heaven. That's where his residency was, though he walked in the flesh. You see how you can understand your walk in the flesh, your relationship, your traveling here, if you can actually see that? And friends, that is a work that we've got to engage in on a daily basis. It's not an easy task because it's easy to forget. It's easy to slip back into the easy pathways. To not navigate the difficult roads, you see. It won't matter the road condition if we're not making the journey at all. That's another thing we need to consider. You know, we already talked about that ideal of the looking for the easy path, and you should be familiar with Matthew 7 and the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus will make it plain. He will make it very plain to us that there is a broad way. In other words, there's enough room for all. It's got enough width. It's got enough depth. You can get in there. No problem. You ain't got to worry about finding your way and getting lost in the shuffle and not making the way. No, you've got plenty of room. It's all wide out. Plenty of elbow room. Even though he says to enter in through the narrow gate, he says, for the gate is wide and the gate is broad that leads to destruction. And there are many who enter through it. Now, that is, again, the metaphor that is used here that will be the standard of what we'll be examining just for a few moments. But we need to understand this, that whether or not, as we will see, we do anything at all, we're travelers or not, we're destined on that road. Spiritually speaking, even if we do not move at all, so to speak, we're moving down that road. Have you ever thought about that? Because if you understand this text, as Jesus says, he talks about entering through the narrow gate. The gate is wide, the narrow, and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter it. Then there is that small gate that is narrow that leads to life. It's difficult. Yes, it has its challenges, but he says few's going to find it, but he says you can. He's just making a statement of fact, but he's not saying it's for the future that, well, in this case, for the age of the Christians, but certainly these that have been living throughout all the biblical age since Jesus, since God has established law, has either been traveling on one way or the other, one path or the other. That this is not just something for the future, like, well, one day I'll be on this route to heaven. And no, it's the here and the now. I have to be a traveler today on that narrow, though it be difficult. That though there be few, because it leads to life. That's the important element that I must see. So it doesn't matter. what the road condition is. As we've seen in our illustration, it can be as rocky as that. But if you're not making the journey, you need to ask yourself, why not? Why not? Do you think that you already have? Do you think all things were already well with you? As we've already seen that the devil is lurking about, we've got to decide, as the Ephesian writer tells us, that we got the whole armor of God. We're ready. That we got to be equipped, because the metaphor there is the soldier image. And therefore, as we are on the road, understanding that the evil one is lurking about, we better have our weapons of warfare. So equipment is another aspect. But we're not looking at that this morning. We got to be properly equipped, but we better be on the road. So it won't matter the road condition if we're not making the journey at all. As Christians, from that perspective, we have lost it all, and we are already on that broad way with plenty of room, and which we will be leading to ourselves to destruction. Is the path just too busy with traffic? Well, we've already seen the broad way isn't had any traffic at all. But are we just too busy in our lives? We don't want to take that hard or that difficult way because the traffic is so thick and we got so much on our plate and it just seems to be overwhelming. I can't do that today. I can't do this thing that I call Christianity. I can't do the things that I would normally do with my brethren or for my brethren or for myself spiritually, because there's just too many other things going on. I have to get this done. Well, dear friends, let me tell you very plainly, you've already set your course, if that's the attitude, on that very broad way that leads to destruction. It can't be our attitude. This path that we go down, as we see in 1 John chapter 2, verse 15 through 17, tells us very plainly that it is a very terrible path which will lead to our destruction. Because the writer John says, we not to love the world nor the things in the world. You know, you've heard this before, but think about that. What's our problem, really? Let's be honest. John's not saying, well, okay, you may not already know this, but don't love the world nor the things in the world. No, it's a fair warning, because he knows the attitude and the mindset of the people of his day as much as he would know it for all time. This is the way the world is. But this is what people are in respect of the world. We're lovers of the world. We'd say by nature, by habit, by practice. We're lovers of the world, period. And we grow up being trained and nurtured in loving the world, don't we? We often have all the elements there before us in our tender childhood. All the trappings of the world are set before us. The toys that we have and we play with. The experiences we get, the entertainment, the vacations, etc. The outings, the friends over, etc. We're not arguing against these things. But the problem is that they lead to bigger and greater problems and challenges. That we grow up and we want to have a career and we seek the job. And the job sometimes takes us away from God because, again, we thought about the world so often. We looked at the achievements and the opportunities over here. And that's the path we have chosen. And we haven't given any consideration. Well, that's the problem. We shouldn't give any consideration. We should give all consideration. It should inform our decision about what we do in these things. Who we will marry. How many times have we seen Christians marry non-Christians? And I don't mean that just in a generic. I mean a very specific one who does not love God. Because, again, that's not even a part of the discussion. It's not even part of the thinking. Because we haven't been on the path. Though it be narrow, though it be difficult, though it will cause us to be challenged in decision-making, and though we will not always win out, as it were, in the worldly affairs. We haven't made those decisions. We don't like that idea, right? So if anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. You know, that is so true, but it is so common, even for Christians. Going back into the world's too easy for us. Because the road is difficult. Right? For the love of all in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eye, and the pride of life. The boastful pride of life, in fact, is not from the Father, but is from the world. But see, we're enveloped by these things. Don't we love the things we see? Don't we love the things that we experience? Don't we love the things that boost our pride, that strengthen our supposed self-worth in the eyes of others even? Don't we want to achieve these things? We want to be well-respected and loved, and certainly we need to strive for respectability, but according to God's way. But there is so much that we need to consider in this. You see, Abraham could have achieved it all, couldn't he? He could have forsaken God. Now, we're not saying God would continue to bless him. But the point is that he had riches, did he not? It would have been easy for him to look for a settlement. Let's build a city. Let's build a town. Let's get out of these tents. Oh, he had a nephew that did that, didn't he? How did getting out of the tents go? Not well at all. Though his righteous soul was vexed, he lost it all. Abraham wouldn't go down that road, would he? Abraham set his travel on God's pathway, and that meant for him. That doesn't mean that all of us need to get out of our houses and live in tents. We don't be literal with this. It would be absurd. In fact, we're not thinking spiritually if we're thinking that away. But we have to think like Abraham. And which, in Abraham's case, it was. Don't get into a home. Don't start building places. Though you have wealth, and don't take your wealth and establish yourself here. Well, God didn't even have to tell him that, did he? We don't have an example in all of the story of Abraham that God says, don't do that in regards to his building and so on and so forth. He was already decided he was a pilgrim and sojourner the day that he left the land that he was told to leave from, Haran. I would argue from Ur of Chaldee all those years before that Abraham was already ready to go where God would tell him, that his feet were already set on the course that was right, the path that was good. But you see, the point, the busy path with traffic seems to be an exciting path, doesn't it? It's that worldly path that though we're, again, in this world, we're not to be of this world, but it's so enticing, isn't it? As John tells us, don't love these. Why would he tell us not to love these things? Because it's too easy. It's too easy. You're going to leave this day behind if the Lord wills. And you're going to come up to Monday, aren't you? What about Monday? There's a world of excitement out there, isn't there? Maybe you've got some grand achievements in your job this week. Maybe you got some opportunities. You got new engagements. You get on the road, you got to travel maybe for a distance, and you got to go here, and you got to go there, and you get to do this. And you do. Maybe you got some fun set up. Maybe there's some excitement in that. This world has so much to entice us with, but let's not kid ourselves. Yes, it's busy, but it's not busy with anything of any value, because when it is finished, we're going to be wanting more. When we're left with what we've had to whatever extent we have received it, we're going to want more, and we're going to crave more, and we're going to continue. You see it in celebrities. You see it in people that got wealthy fast, that they're searching and searching for more after they get to a certain point because it's not enough, and it's not satisfying enough. But they won't stop to realize it can never be satisfying enough because it was never meant to be to begin with. But you know, we're going to have to decide whether or not our path is one that is busy like this with all the traffic and the trappings of this world. Or is it really a settled one? Though it has difficulty, though it has challenge, doesn't have the noise. It doesn't have the excitement of the world. It has a certain degree of peace, doesn't it? Philippians 4 and verse 7. Let God guard your heart and through His Word for sure, with a peace that passes all understanding. That's what we need to be striving for. We need to see this business of the world as only necessary to make our lives as ordered as possible as we set our path and our course. Though it be difficult on the path that God has chosen for us, for our heavenly home. Now, that doesn't mean we cannot achieve in this life, that we cannot get an education, strive to do certain things for ourselves and our family, but it's all going to be monitored. It's all going to be guided if we're careful, because we are guided, we're on that path to heaven. Abraham had it. Abraham was wealthy. He had sheep. He had sheep herd. He had servants. His family grew. But he was always on the path to his heavenly home. His builder and maker was God. Secondly, is the path on which you have chosen paved only with good intentions? You know, you could be on that busy, very exciting and exhilarating path in which you're here, you're there, and everything you're thinking about is from this worldly perspective, because that's all you can see is the physical. And though you have Christianity maybe on the sidelines, and that may be the case, it's doing you very little, if anything at all. It certainly is not going to aid you, because your path is not on heaven. One little problem in that, one little difficulty, and I assure you, you will lose it all. But you could also be one that is really intended to do good. And maybe you're on this first path, as we've talked about, and while you're doing that, you might argue that your other path is that you really intend to do better. Have you ever heard that? I have. And have you ever done that? I have. I plan on doing this. I'm going to get better at my Bible reading. I'm going to get better at my service. There are things that I know I'm going to do that. I've got to. But they're all good intentions that have no meat. No meat on the bone, as we would say. I'm not going to really do anything. I'm just empty words, empty action, because they are not worthy of anything. James chapter 4. You know, friends, this right here is probably just as insidious and dangerous as the first. Because with our eyes, we see all that we see out here, and we can be excited about it. And I understand it's very enticing. You can't close your eyes, but you've got to close your spiritual eyes to all of the trappings. But likewise, this one here is just as dangerous for you, because you've obeyed the gospel and yet you're in this world and you know you want to achieve a certain amount of success in your life, and at the same time you want to serve God, so you're struggling between the two masters. But we understand Jesus says you cannot serve both, because you're either going to forsake the one and love the other, right? You're going to give up one. You may not think that you are, but again, it goes back to the good intention story. So Philippians chapter 4 and verse 16, actually, he says, but as it is, you boast in your arrogance. So really, even in the good intention category, there's an amount of boasting. Because he talks about, of course, the one that's going to go and do all these wonderful things, which will be an excellent example of the one that's in the traffic business. It's out there, I'm going to go, I'm going to buy, I'm going to sell, and so on and so forth. But you don't know what your life's going to be. You don't know what the morrow is going to hold. You don't know if you will have the morrow. But notice what he says in verse 17. Therefore, to one who knows the right thing to do and does not do it, to him it is sin. And that part I want to apply to that point. Dear friends, you realize good intentions are nothing short of sin. Why? Because it's presumed already, if you're intending to do good, that you know what is right. And if you know what is right and you will not do it, then you're a sinner. You are sinning in that. And so your good intentions are not nothing but really evil. We're only fooling ourselves, and even then we will pay the price. We might could fool others in our good intentions, but hopefully the honest will see it. And as we talked about in our class, pointed out to us, as Paul did to the Corinthians, You, dear friends, you need to point those things out to me too, just as much as I need for you. I need that from you as much as you need it from me if we care for one another. Because our objective needs to be the same. We've got to set our course on the pathway to heaven forevermore. So, there cannot be no room for good intentions. Don't tell me what you're planning to do, please. Don't tell me what you've been thinking about doing. Don't tell me what, if everything gets lined up in just the way and you get all of this done, then you're going to start doing that. If I get all of this just right, then I'll be ready to serve the Lord in this way. And I promise you I'm getting ready to do all that. And once the time is right, I will be doing that. Do not tell me that. Because, dear friends, if I care for you, I'm going to tell you, dear brother or sister, that is nothing short of sin. For if you do not what is right, knowing you know what is right, you are sinning. Please change. See, this is difficult, isn't it? Because you know that as well as I've already pointed out about myself, you too have had to have good intentions at times. I've been good intended, right? You have been good intended, but you've not fulfilled your obligations. Why? Because you were simply telling yourself something that made you feel better. And you thought just maybe telling it to someone else would also make you look good or right in their eyes likewise. Maybe you get affirmation and confirmation that what you're doing is well. Please don't go down that road. The path that is paved with good intentions will get you down the broad path that leads to destruction. And finally, if I've discovered I'm on the wrong path, what do I need to do? Well, do I need to stop? Well, I would argue you would, because there is a perspective that needs to be settled. Now think about it. If I'm on the wrong path, am I not on a pathway that has distorted my judgment, right? That I don't have a clarity and understanding of what I need to be seeing. You know, a lot of times when we talk about changing one's life, correcting one's way, sometimes it's a knee-jerk reaction. If I just do that, everything will be well. For instance, and don't get me wrong, because I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't do these things. For instance, if someone is unfaithful in their worship assembly, in other words, they're not coming as they should, is there a problem with assembly? Is that their sin? Is that the real issue? Let's be honest. There's something behind all that. I don't just stop coming because I have an assembly issue. I stop coming because there's something else that has caused me to have no interest in the things of God and God's people. That's really the problem. People don't just say, well, okay, your problem is assembly. Now, maybe that's all I can see because I don't know your heart, but that's also the problem that I don't know you well enough to know what else is going on in your life. But I need to try to discover that. Because there's a reason why you're not coming. If I know that it's not something that is preventing you that we cannot do nothing about or you cannot do nothing about, if there is something that is keeping you out of the assembly, there's something greater than the assembly that's the issue. Because do you not go where you want to go when you want to go? Don't you have associations and family and friends and other occasions? You go those places, don't you? You know, sometimes a preacher will say, well, try to do that at work. Only show up on Mondays and Tuesdays. Skip your Thursdays and Fridays. Maybe Monday through Wednesday, you'll be generous. See how well that works, right? Don't show up at your shift that you're scheduled for. Show up for whatever you choose. And you hear those stories, but, you know, it sounds absurd because you understand that you wouldn't be working very long, right? So usually the lesson goes that away. Well, if you did that, would your employer accept you? No. Well, then expect God not to accept you. I get that. That's a valid point. But, you see, the reason you go to work to begin with is why? You like to eat, one, right? That's one thing. You want to achieve some things in your life. You want to have a house to live in. You don't want to be living out under the trees or out on the ground, do you? You want to live in your home. You want the comforts of the home. You want air conditioning this time of the year, right? So on and so forth. So you're not going to fail regardless of whether you like the place or not. You have a reason to go. You don't fail to not just show up for work arbitrarily because you just don't go to work. There's reason. There's a motivation for you to go. Likewise, there's a motivation for you to not go. And the same is true. So let's be careful to understand what we're dealing with here. And that's just one illustration of many that we might provide. If I've discovered I'm on the wrong path, certainly coming back to the assembly, if that was the issue, would be one help. But there needs to be something else discussed. And there's where the shepherds need to be working and the mature members need to be working with that person and discovering what it is that would prevent you. Because whatever caused you to go away, even if you were somewhat shamed of yourself or convinced by someone to return, that won't last. I've seen it. You come and you go. You come and you go. But nothing's ever been settled because the root problem's never been solved. So this is what I'm dealing with. Jeremiah chapter 6. We've had enough time to turn there, I hope. It's right there. Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 16. Notice what Jeremiah says in this context. Thus says the Lord. Notice this first line. Stand by the ways and see and ask for the ancient paths. I want to stop there just for the moment. You stand first by the way. Why? Jeremiah is talking to a people that have strayed off the path. Jeremiah is dealing with a people that is way off the road. And by the way, he is dealing with a people that's in the midst of going into captivity anyway. So they're not going to fix that problem. But they still have to fix their pathway, don't they? Because the general location, geography at this point is irrelevant. Whether you're in Babylon or you're in Jerusalem or wherever else, it's not relevant. What's relevant is where your pathway. Because remember Abraham. Like I said earlier, I believe Abraham was one that was faithful to God before he ever got to the land. He didn't just decide when he landed in the land of Canaan, okay, here it goes. I'm on my path to heaven. I've given up all my earthly desires. Now I'm going to do this now. So therefore I stop at Bethel and I set up the altar and I worship and praise God, call upon him. And now forevermore. No, he wouldn't be in a strange place with strange language, with many mightier people living in tents, always braving the elements, all kinds of challenges. Though he would grow and prosper, still was a minority among the people if he had just started that when he hit the land. Or let's give him this much. If he started it the day that he left, it didn't happen. Abraham was settled long before, as I said, even the Ur of Chaldees. But why could he do all that he did? Because he was settled in that. Notice the author here. Stand by the ways and see and ask for the ancient past. There are things for us to discover in order to set the course right. If it's assembly, come to the assembly and then begin to start looking for that ancient pathway, the ancient ways, where the good way is, and walk in it. In other words, you're going to stop, get your bearings, the compass settled, and understand spiritually where you need to be so that you don't go down another path that's wrong. You could go down a religious path that will lead you to destruction just as much as the worldly path. Or, because you haven't settled this, and you simply fix some things that are observable mechanically. You've done some things like come back to church, stop that for the moment, etc. But you haven't decided that there is a way. And it's as much as what we need to do as much as it is what we don't need to do. A lot of times we focus on what we don't need to do, though that is important, to the neglect, though, of what we need to do. There is much that needs to be replaced. You end up with a vacuum if you only take out. You must put in and replace what you have taken out. Or you will go back and put in what you have taken out. You see? It's that simple. Nobody's just going to be empty and void in the sense that whatever I was doing wrong, I just stopped, but I haven't replaced it with anything good. That's what we're discovering here. The pathway to heaven is a putting in of things that make it possible. It's not just not doing wrong. It's striving what is right. But what is right is a cultivating experience, a nurturing experience. It's a life-informing decision. It's one that's life-affirming, as we discover throughout the New Testament. Why not? Jesus is life, isn't he? Why not? Because he can provide life. It's more than just an eternal place. It's an experience that's eternal in every aspect. It's a replacement of that which is temporal and carnal and destroying. So, dear friends, my pathway, it doesn't need to be not just the wrong path, but it needs to be the right path. And I might just need to stop for the moment and discover what that is as I began to get my bearings. And I put now not only the brakes on, but now I get the compass out and I find that pathway. And now I am prepared to be on it. So, dear friends, do you see? The Hebrew writer says in Hebrews chapter 10, verse 26 through 29, familiar passage. For if we go on sinning willfully after receiving the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins, but a terrifying expectation of judgment and fury of a fire which remains, which will consume the adversaries. See, we will be the adversaries, you see, if we have not got our bearings straight and we go on sinning and living in the condition. And if we return back to that with no intention of setting my course right, then guess what? Then there is this fiery expectation. And he goes on to say, as he describes it, anyone who has set aside the law of Moses dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. How much severe punishment do you think he will deserve who has trampled underfoot the Son of God and has regarded as unclean the blood of the covenant by which he is sanctified and has insulted the Spirit of grace? Dear friends, that's exactly what we're doing. We have decided that the blood of Jesus Christ means nothing. Oh, we are kidding ourselves if we think otherwise, but we have decided it means nothing when we have not decided that our path will be sure, steadfast, though difficult. It will be a pathway that is devoid of all of this carnal, devoid of the carnal thinking, the carnal practices. It'll be a decided pathway that has said that my builder and maker is God for my home. And since it's not made with hands, it's above. It's a decide that I am no longer going to rest on any good intentions, for they're not really that good at all. And I don't care one whit for this busy traffic, this life that is full of trappings that will lure me in. Think about it, please. If you're here this morning and you need to obey the gospel of Jesus Christ, do so now. All things have been made ready and prepared for that, and I want to implore you that this is the first step in that path as you journey on that road, that if you decide to do this, that you're ready to begin that road. Yes, it's difficult and challenging, but you know what? If you don't make it, there's nothing but condemnation guaranteed. You're already on the broad path. You're already on that easy way, and you ain't got no worry about room. You got plenty of it, and you will go on down to condemnation. Why not correct that? Have you sin that needs to be repented of? Please do so. Do we need to help you with it? Is it sin or reproach that you brought upon God's people? That's another thing. And then we need to help you with that. And so therefore, please consider where your path, where your foot is, and what road you're on as we stand and sing the invitation song.